Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hello, champions. It's Archie Curzon here, the CEO of Clapham. I want to speak directly to the England fans. It's time this weekend we came together. Bill Sweeney, don't worry, your bonus is going to be okay, but we must come together. The England team and fans have drifted. Now this problem must be lifted. We must come together. We must come together. Steve said we've got an exciting squad. Full of youth and experienced players. Steve is excited. Steve is excited. Come and join me at Twickers, baby.
We're gonna get it on. We're gonna get it on.
Cause this weekend is the weekend where the team of fans become one. We need to chant like we never chanted before. Come on, England. The boys have heard it before, but they need some more. Come on, fucking England! Drink 10 Guinness pre, it's the only way to be.
Come on, guys. Now's the time we came together. Get behind the boys. Stop getting your fucking Guinnesses during the game and watch the fucking game. This weekend, they need us. Love and champagne. I'll see you after for about 20 Guinnesses.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to episode 170 of the Rugbyers Podcast. I must start by saying, Archie, that was actually quite impressive. You sung a lot of songs in my time with you, but that was
yeah. Well, mate, that was pretty much my Saturday and Sunday, just recording that
really?
At home. Yeah,
God, that's quite miserable.
No. It was an absolute joy. You know, I had to do something that spoke to the team and to the fans.
Well, you said
and this weekend, Fred. You know, I'm going to watch it at Twickers. And I've self-nominated myself as the captain of the crowd. I'll be making sure people get their Guinnesses in before and not during.
Crucial. Well, you said you weren't going to be drinking because you were playing again on Saturday. How did you get on?
We won quite comfortably.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I had an absolute stormer of the game. Really? I mean, you think I'd be slowing down at my age, but I seem to be getting better and better. I'm like Danny Kerr.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see myself stopping for another 4 or 5 years.
Were a lot of the guys gutted that you didn't come out? Actually, they're probably quite happy that you didn't come
no,
out.
No, well, I mean, they're happy in a way because they know when the captain of Ales comes out. That's me. That's what they call me when I'm out on the lash. Captain Ale.
Bit of a winner.
It's like Captain America, but I'm just Captain Ale. they were actually quite happy because I do make everyone do the fines. But I just said to them, listen, guys, big game next weekend, England, Ireland. I need to be on tip-top form. You know, I've been practicing all my chants. Come on, England!
Heave England! Swing low, sweet chariot.
Well, you practiced them.
Yeah, well, I have to get ready in voice, mate. This is, you know, the week building up to a big game at Twickers is there's a lot that goes into it. You ask a lot of the people going to Twickers on Saturday, they'll be putting in a shift now.
So they'll be training like the players will be?
Yes, but vocally. You know, okay. I'm doing it every morning now after I do my naked burpees, naked sit-ups, naked jumping squats.
Yeah.
I'll be doing me, 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 me. Mo, 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 mo. La, 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 la. Come on, England! A lot goes into it, Fred.
I can tell.
And it's going to be a big day, mate. You know, I'm starting lunch at 12 p.m. And by the time I get to kickoff, I'll be in full flow. You know, I'll be peaking at the right time, and I just can't wait. My only note to everyone going is: drink your Guinness before, get your Guinness at halftime, and drink to your heart's content after. Sit and watch the rugby and create some atmosphere.
Support the boys.
If I see anyone around me jumping up and getting beers during, I will find them.
Really?
I'll make them do a bump on. I don't care if their kids are there. they'll be doing a bum funnel.
Oh my god, that's quite crazy.
But hopefully the team appreciate that. You know, I've gone to bat for them.
Do we have a chance?
Clodis, we always have a chance, especially with our social media campaign.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
With the boys sending a photo and they'll just be like,
"Can't wait for the big match at Ireland. This weekend at Twickers, it's going to be real."
And then Joe Marler probably posts something quite kooky, like him just doing a funny face and being like, "Oh, I don't know what's happening this weekend." he is so kooky.
He is very kooky.
It's really good to have a kooky character in that squad.
He is very, very kooky.
He's going to have a hell of a career afterwards. He's just got so much kookiness. Who knows where he'll go?
Well, there are some great characters in that team, obviously. Shame we can't get any of them on the podcast.
Yeah, so. No, it's a shame. But unfortunately, like, you know what they're like, the boys. Sorry, Steve said I've got to keep my head down. First button of the pod.
Yeah, yeah.
Great button as well.
Well,
not as good as this button.
State score, ooh-wee.
Okay, well, let's not do too many buttons. I'll tell you why, because we are joined in person today, a little special, by an England legend, a guy who really is a big personality, the one, the only, Lawrence Dalio. Better off the pitch than he is on, and he's won the World Cup twice.
Yeah, mate, he's an absolute legend. It's a real honour. It shows where this podcast has come. I mean, it's not quite that podcast with the Love Island guy.
Not yet.
That is a... By the way, a fascinating listen.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got some really good stories.
Okay.
I think there's only one thing to say. Onside. This is going to be some seriously good chat.
We're joined by an absolute legend, Lorenzo Bruno Nero Dallaglio, World Cup winner, Sevens World Cup winner, World Rugby Hall of Famer, British and Irish Lion. You've done it all, mate. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How is it?
Great. Great to be here. A Londoner as well. So, yeah, got properly lost.
Clapham or not?
Grew up in East London, in Bethnal Green. My parents must have won the lottery or had an epiphany, but I ended up in Barnes in southwest London. Oh,
really nice.
Yes, taken out of the hood of Barnes, I think, as I called it. But no, born and bred in London, lived all over, and now residing in West London, yeah.
Just with all that kind of stuff there, your CV must read unbelievably.
Well, listen, I never meant to be a rugby player. I mean, getting your face smashed in all over the world is overrated, let me tell you. But no, I had a job and I used to play rugby as a hobby. I actually got into rugby because, you know, just to be serious for one second, lost my sister on the Marchioness just down the road. Yeah. 1989, I was 16. She went out to a party, never came back. Obviously, I was in a mess for a couple of years, making some terrible life choices. And then I thought, right, I need to sort my shit out. And I thought I joined a rugby club. And that was the reason why I played rugby, genuinely. It was Tuesday and Thursday night, just as a hobby. I just needed a family, a community, a sense of purpose. And then the game went professional overnight in 95. A lot of my mates went, I'm going to carry on being a bricklayer or builder, you know, broker or a posh public school boy. And I thought, well, I'll give rugby a go. I was a surveyor selling property. I think I was my key strength was probably getting squatters out of shop units, really. I mean, that's why they employed me. Yeah, but I went pro overnight, and then, you know, 18 years later, the journey continues, really. So, yeah.
That's incredible. You're a big fan of surveying, aren't you?
Yeah. The property market, I love it. I've connected with a lot of people on LinkedIn who are in the property world, commercial and resi. I've got a lot of respect for them. There's a lot of money there, and I've had some good nights with some guys in property. We always end up playing credit card roulette, which is great fun and really good banter.
Did you stick your Avios card in?
Yeah. Well, it's about getting the points. You know, that's the key thing.
It's about winning the game and not paying, really.
Well, yeah. But in a way, it's a bonus for me because if I win it, I get the points and I get to go to Dubai free. And I absolutely love Dubs.
Yeah.
It's one of the best places. Just talking about, you know, you're saying you found rugby to help you. What happened when you finished rugby? Did you find that difficult?
It gets a bit monotonous. It gets a bit kind of been there, done it. And I was quite looking forward to engaging my brain, going out on the smash on a Thursday and Friday night and enjoying myself again.
I want to talk about public school.
I just got to say, I bloody love a Thirsty Thursday.
You do, don't you?
One of my favourite. Big shout out to Embargoes. What a place.
Yeah. You obviously went to Ampleforth.
Hurry up in there, son.
You went to Ampleforth College, right?
I did, yeah.
Are the rumours true that you played like 4-15 there? Or is that not right?
Well, I didn't last the distance, let's just say.
Okay.
I did 4 out of 5 years. My sister died just before I went back for the final year. Right. And I think it was termed, it was in everyone's best interest if I left the school. But Catholic family, my mum sent me up to Ampleforth. I was getting into quite a lot of trouble in London. And they just sent me up there to get into more trouble, really. But run by Benedictine monks, amazing school, taught me to play rugby.
Need to work on their PR.
Quite seriously. Well, yeah, the headlines, you know, sort of Catholic monks, Benedictine monks, former school of Lawrence Dallaglio and Rupert Everett. Doesn't really work, but...
Two big people I look up to.
I mean, I do remember going up there. I had an amazing time. And in those days, I mean, you guys were a lot younger, obviously, probably born when I retired from rugby, but they only focused really on people who were quite clever at any school, whereas now, actually, they focus on everyone. But I remember going to my first confession, I had a monk in front of me, I was about 12 years old. I said, this is my first time. Who goes first, me or you? I said, and you can take your hand off my knee, by the way, just so we're clear. And they went, oh, that bloke Delalio seems to have us pretty well worked out. they never invited me back to confession, which is a great shame. Because
I didn't go to that kind of school, but I had that kind of relationship with my geography teacher, Mr. Matthews.
You got an A+, did you?
Yeah, he used to take me to his desk and ask me what kind of ruler I want, and he always said to me to use the bendy one. Really good guy. Although, Mr. Matthews, if you are listeners, please do stop DMing me on Instagram. There is, you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Exactly.
Apparently you're known as Del Boy. Is that true?
I thought I was a bit of a wheeler dealer. Well, listen, I was from the East End of London originally. Yeah. So I think my claim to fame at Ampleforth was not my rugby career. I managed to take the school logo and put it on the front of a Zippo lighter and sell them for about 20 quid each. Not sure it was copyright. I think that might have contributed to my exit. But we all loved a Zippo, didn't we, in those days?
I've actually met Lawrence before. Previous to this, yeah. It was the highlight of my nightlife because I went to school with Nick Abendanon.
Okay.
Yeah, and I sort of taught Bendy everything I knew. And and obviously he went on to be a professional. I took the semi-pro route.
Yeah.
Because I figured there's a lot of money to be had in the city and you can earn that for a longer period of time. And I still love ruggers. You know, I still love a bum funnel on a Saturday night with the boys. But actually, I remember one night we went out to China White's and it was like the highlight of my life. And I shook your hand and I never washed it. I haven't washed it since.
Table one, I think you found.
No, you were right at the back by the curtain that pulled back.
Absolutely. John Stevens, the owner of China White. Yeah.
Good man.
Quite a loose nightclub. A lot of the guys who come on here who did the bars, they used to go.
Yeah. I mean, the motto across most professions is if you're doing well, you go out and enjoy yourself, don't you, really? And rugby was no different. If you win, we're going to go out and we're going to have a great time.
Pitcher and piano back in the days with the Wasp
Boys? Bit of a graveyard, that one. If we lose, we're not going out. We're going to go upstairs and discuss why we lost. So it's a sort of career where you have to be winning about 75% of the time. Otherwise, you're not going to have much fun, are you, really?
Kenny Logan came on the pod and said there was a period where you would all go out on a Wednesday night, train Thursday, or go out Thursday and then go out Saturday. But that had to change, and Gats changed at one point just because you weren't winning. Is that correct?
I think he changed it because he could no longer read out the team. So, but yeah, I think, you go out. I mean, if you try and go out the night of the game, because you never really sleep, to be honest with you, after a game, because you've got so much adrenaline pumping through your body, whether you've won or lost. But I used to quite like a Monday night club, Tuesday night club, whichever, really. Ultimately, you're judged on what happens on a Saturday. Yeah. Yeah. And if you play well and you win, no one questions your routine and your preparation. If you don't, then everyone is going through it with a fine tooth comb, going, what were you up to, every day, every night?
Well, you oversaw one of the greatest dominances of any sort of club in European and domestic rugby, which we're going to come into in a second. But firstly, we've got a top 10 UK Christmas hit with More Lash. Is it right that you...
More Lash?
Yeah, is it right that you're a backing singer for Tina Turner?
Well, I was a choir boy. No, that's not going back to Ampleforth, by the way, just so we're clear. Before I went to Ampleforth, I was at school in Richmond and we had a very good choir. I think I was in there more for team morale than for my actual singing ability. Yeah. But we did things like Evita. So we used to provide the singers for Evita. So I performed on the West End stage. I was at a soft spot for Stephanie Lawrence and Elaine Page, I've got to be honest with you, when you're 12 and 13.
Yeah.
It was amazing to walk out in front of, what was a banging musical, packed house, kind of probably prepared me for my sporting career later. But we ended up being backing vocals for Tina Turner, We Don't Need Another Hero,
which
we recorded at Abbey Road Studios. I think it went number one in about five countries. There's a reason why it went to number one. And it had everything to do with Tina Turner.
Do you get royalties?
I do get royalties, yes.
Do you really?
They go to the charity that I set up called Rugby Works. I guess I got to a crossroads in my life, probably every other week, to be honest with you. But I got to a particular crossroads where it was sort of sports or music, and I went definitely down the sport direction.
Like Matt Stevens. He could have gone music as well.
Yeah, quite possibly. Well, he carried on sport like he was music. Didn't he, really?
We had him on the podcast. There was a he's such a good boy, but there was just a stack of Marlboro Reds, literally in camera shot,
and a lot of wine.
What a man!
Those Lithuanian Marlboro Reds.
Yeah. You led Wasps to the first professional league title in 97. Mm. Obviously, the first time that the old school meets the new. Just give us an understanding of like the celebrations for that incredible achievement, and also just like how weird it was getting professional.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when the game first went pro, I got to be honest with you, no one had a clue what they were doing. You know, you're talking about people who all had jobs and they gave those jobs up, and you go from a hobby on a Tuesday and Thursday night where you turn up after school or after work for 2 hours, 4 hours a week, and then play on a Saturday to suddenly. I remember my first coach, a guy called Nigel Melville, who played for England, but he was the first professional coach we had at Wasps, and he said, how many days a week do you reckon we should get everyone in? Well, you're asking me. I said, I'm 22, I'm the captain. But, you know, I said, well, I think Saturday's quite important. So if we get them in on Saturday and then we work backwards from there. And if you think about it, the game has been professional for 29 years. And the number of mistakes that were made in the early days, we had another coach who came out and said, right, we're going to do this drill. I went, well, where'd you learn that? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you were a carpenter last week. So where have you pulled that one off the internet or something like that? So, you know, as a player, you know, players now just do what they're told. And I think the advances that have been made in the game around recovery, around all these things. I mean, some of the training exercises we did, you just think, right, I want you to run at that block over there. In fact, I want you to run at them three blocks there and see if you can get through there. So basically, well, should I just go and get run over by a bus? That'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it, really? So I think the mistakes that were made were there. But also, we had a lot of fun. We were the kind of ambassadors, the pioneers. We kind of helped shape the game. The last amateur, first professional rugby players, you know. I mean, when I first played, you used to come off the field looking like you'd been, you know, birched and tortured, really, you know, because rucking was a big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you'd get in a bath that looked like a sewage pit with about 15 other blokes.
Brilliant.
And then you'd go upstairs and have 30 pints in about 2 hours. And
yeah.
You knew then that none of that was good for you.
Yeah.
But actually you thought, oh, it's good fun though, isn't it?
Yeah. So. But that's what I do on the weekend now, because yeah. I'm captain of the Clapham Falcons.
Lovely.
So we play rugby every Saturday, fly half, I run the line. I'm also club secretary.
Great.
And that is, you know, for luckily in the week, you know, my body is my temple. I regularly eat from a Tupperware. Yeah. I only really eat chicken breasts, egg whites and broccoli. I CrossFit a lot.
Are you mates with James Haskell? Are you
yeah, well, me, the same diet as him. I decided not to go down the DJ route, but has been on the podcast a number of times, and we've discussed chassis, but then on the weekend I just let it all hang out, you know, and that's where I come, you know, I need to get loosey-goosey. And I think that's what the game is kind of like sort of missing at the moment, because you talk about all the mistakes, but your era really captured like a good fan base. Mm. And I guess when I was younger and I come to Twickenham and I'd watch you, or I'd go to a Wasps game at Wickham, like there seemed to be a lot of positivity around that game. Do you think, in all seriousness, do you think that your era, that the mistakes have been had, that it's become so professional, that's kind of lost a lot of fun when you go to games? Because I love, don't get me wrong, people complain about Twickenham. Yeah. I love it. I love the corporate undertone. You know, I'm wild there. Well, yeah. You know, I'll shout
you
stuff.
Give a couple of chances. Yeah,
love the ticket price. You love
the ticket price is great, because that really
you get to meet all your old property mates.
Yeah. Well, it's a corporate shindig. Yeah, it's clients. I take all my clients there.
Pound a square foot. And,
yeah.
You know, it means that Charlotte can send the kids to
it. I say it's one of the best pubs and one of the best places to do business in the country.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm wild there. You know, I'm a rugger fan. You know, I'll shout stuff like, England, come on, England. and you know, I've been known to say, his hands are in the ruck, ref. You've got your eyes open. Yeah. And people think I'm, you know, loosey-goosey. But in all seriousness, from your standpoint, do you think Twickenham might have lost that magic because of the mistakes that have been made coming up?
Are we talking about on the field, or are we talking about off the field?
We're talking off the field, but on the field.
I mean, generally, if people enjoy what they're watching, they don't go out and buy, you know, 10 pints during the game, do they, really?
No.
So I was quite shocked at the experience. I sat in the stands, or stood in the stands, or whatever you do in the stands, it was unbelievable, really. I don't think it's a great experience, but then again, it's my favourite stadium in the world. So if you as players create the right atmosphere and connection with the fans, then I think that people kind of enjoy the experience. And we want to get fans on their feet.
But you're saying, you know, you don't want to be a grumpy old man quoting yourself, but rugby's getting hard to watch.
Well, it's eating itself, isn't it? I mean, yeah, you go there, you've got no idea. If you're new to rugby, you're thinking, what the fuck is going on here? I mean, literally, you know, it's taking forever, it's complicated. You know, you can't guarantee that the 80 minutes is going to be great. You know, hopefully you get a game like France and Africa in the World Cup, but you don't always get games
Do
like
we need
that.
To get Max Gazzini over? the old Cerf Francais owner who used to do
to take us to a few little places in Paris that were quite interesting.
Yeah. But his sort of pre-match routine is getting elephants out there, getting, you
know.
He
wouldn't like you. You're not blonde, though, to be fair.
No, fair play. But he used to like Haskell, didn't he?
Yeah. Anyone Aryan, yeah. no, he, listen, what you can guarantee is that, you know, the 3 or 4 hours before you kick off the game and the 3 or 4 hours afterwards are the best match day experience you can. Mm. And I'm not sure, maybe rugby at Twickenham is a bit complacent because they sell, you know, they sell their tickets. I mean, I bought a couple of tickets the other day, £165. Money,
but the thing is, you've got to remember it's a business, Lawrence, and Bill Sweeney needs to get that bonus, okay? And he's on six figures, but I know, I'm a personal source of mine, I connect with them on LinkedIn, always giving kudos.
Do you get in the photos with the England coach as well, or do you worry about running the business?
No, I like the fact that he's there with the coaches making the decisions, but I know from a various source that he's a keen skier, and I think at the end of Six Nations he likes to take his family skiing, and if Twickenham doesn't sell out,
where are we talking? Verbier, Valdezette, St.
I think he goes St. Anton with the family, but that costs extortion amount because he's got a few kids and then their friends and his and then family friends. They all like to go, and I think that
we were going to start a fund. If
he's a great businessman. I love what he's doing.
What? I didn't learn to ski till I was 35. I had a bar in Verbier with James Blunt.
Yeah, I've been there.
And Carl Fogarty.
Yeah, yeah. You were each in a cubicle.
A random trio. It was called Lavash.
I went there. You were each in a cubicle, weren't you? There was like a photo of you in each. There was one of you, one of Blunt.
I think if you wanted to go for a number two downstairs, you chose this.
Is it still going or not?
Well, unfortunately, the Swiss guy that we did the JV with, I think he seemed to think that business wasn't quite trading as well, but he was on his new Harley Davidson as he was flying away with the management accounts. But do you know what? Just a very quick story. The opening day of that, I'd only met James Blunt and Carl Fogarty very briefly before. Great guys, both of them. Completely different, but mad as a bag of frogs. And Carl Fogarty came up to me, and it was the press launch, and all the fine ladies and the press all wrapped around James Blunt. He goes, "Fucking hell," he goes, "how come that bloke James Blunt's got all the press and the birds wrapped around him?" I said, "What do you mean, the international pop star over there?" He said, "Yeah, but he's not won a World Cup like you." I said, "Look, mate, I've won two actually. I don't like to boast." he said, "Yeah," but he said, "I've won seven world titles, and he was Superbike champion seven times. And I said, "Look, let me just enlighten you on a couple of things." I said, "Somehow, Back to Bedlam, right? His album is the fifth best-selling album of all time." Jesus. And I said, "You have had a helmet on your head for 25 years, so no one knows who you are." And he looked at me and goes, "Oh, yeah, good point. So, I mean, he was amazing. Anyone who drives at 250 miles an hour, about 2 inches from the pavement, is... he was fantastic.
Well, we worked out the problems with Twickers, but let's just quickly look ahead, because in a couple of days we play against Ireland. Do we have any chance? And also, has this Six Nations been the worst one on records, because it's just been so...
Listen, we've always got a chance. You know, when you've only got two teams, and the best team doesn't always win, don't forget. You know, I was at Wasps for a long time and we weren't the best team in a lot of the games. Yes, we have got a chance. It is a bit depressing at the moment. I think we've won 4 of the last 11 games at Twickenham. For me, rugby was not a job, it was a metaphor for my life. You know, it rebuilt my life, and therefore I think... we all get completely carried away with measuring kind of data and, you know, how much can you lift and how much can you push and how fast can you run and this, that and the other. But the two things you don't measure in life and in sport is what's going on up in your head and what's going on in your heart. And the two things that you need when you're playing rugby particularly is to connect the head and the heart. So, without getting too emotional about it, of course we can beat Ireland. Will we? Unlikely. Because they're a very good side, and we probably need all things to go our way. Yeah, there's something not quite right about England at the minute. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Can I just say, I tell you what is right is their social media strategy. It's fucking brilliant.
Well, they've got Marcus Smith, who's the face of Instagram for the England rugby, but he's not in the team.
No, so
you can clearly see that one department's talking to the other.
Yeah. And I like when they post photos in the training going, "We go again," or like, "Thanks for your support."
Yeah, thanks for your support. I know half of you weren't even in the state, you're out buying beer, but really thank you for your support.
But that actually makes me feel reassuring.
We were shit. We will get better. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Jamie George is an amazing guy, and well done for him for playing last weekend, given everything that happened with his mother the week before.
Yeah.
Finally, we've got someone who I feel will front up to the cameras and actually say it the way it is. You know, if you win, you get as a captain, you get in front of everyone, and you say, you know, thank you for your support. You know, this is single out the individuals that did well. and you move on. If you lose, like they did against Fiji, to a half-empty stadium, you apologise to the nation.
Yeah.
You say, that was unacceptable and not good enough. We will get better. Because I just think people want transparency and honesty, really. And they don't want to hear from people who've already rehearsed their answers, if you know what I mean.
Lawrence. It's different to me in my office. If a deal goes south, then I actually get Sandra, my PA, to go out instead of me, and she sort of dresses the office.
She takes it.
Well, it normally is Sandra's fault. She's something, you know, because
she phones up your girlfriends and invites them out.
Yeah, well, she also just makes, you know, she doesn't get back to the emails when she's meant to.
Yeah.
Annoying though, because recently she's got pregnant again, and that just irritates me because
yours.
You know, I don't get any say in it at all. It's annoying. This is city life. Now I've got to get
DNA test anyway.
No, I'm a single father, though, okay. So I've got a daughter called Johnny Jono Haskell Abendanon Curzon. She's 18 months, but one of the most unladylike people I've ever come across.
Mentally scarred by the sounds of it.
Yeah, no, she's good. She's got a great nanny. Although there's a lot of friction in our house at the moment because the nanny, one of the arrangements was the nanny would sleep in my bed because we wanted to make
sort of a couple, is it?
Yeah, but the nanny's not keen for it, and I don't think it's anything. Not about the. It's because I eat a lot of eggs, she says, and that's the problem.
Commercial break.
Oh, guys, sorry. I know you're on XL in here. Can I just come in quickly? Look, had this chat last week. Don't worry, don't get up. There's nothing. Honestly, I'm here friendly. Like, the quarter's going well. The market's very buoyant. You guys are all doing really well. I love your work on XL. Just to note that there are still some stash on Samurai. This is a once in a lifetime. When it's gone, it's gone. There's t-shirts, shorts, training shorts. I love training in shorts, but especially training shorts. Rugby shorts, backpack. So if you want to become a Clapham Falcon, you want to be jogging around the common, getting the attention of men who want to be you and girls who want to get with you, then click in the link in the bio and get your stash now. It is phenomenal stuff. It actually improves my training by 5 to 10%. Anyway, enjoy, guys. You get back to work. If anyone wants it, I'm going to get a coffee. So just slack me. I'll bring them in. All right. No, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood. Things are good. Lawrence Yale's on the pod, so we're moving in the right direction.
Talking about Jamie George fronting up, finally we get a captain we can get behind. You're obviously, well, Warren Gatlin said the greatest captain he's ever met. 97, you became captain of England. A couple of years later, you have to step down.
Yeah.
Do you ever look at 03 and go, like, it would have been the same with me at the helm? Or do you think things would have been different?
Spiritual leader.
Yeah. And also, do you, like, regret having to lose the captainship? I know you do regain it later in your career, but...
I look back and think, are there any regrets? Yes, there was one week where I decided to kick the ball to the corner against Wales at Wembley, and we lost the game and lost the Grand Slam. Yeah. Scotland won the last ever Five Nations title. As I walked off the field, I got gobbed on by a Welsh supporter, which is why, you know, why Eric Cantona did what he did.
Yeah. I dated a girl like that.
And then the following week, I was on the front page of the News of the World. I thought, not the best week of my life, that, and lost England captaincy. Listen, I think a couple of things to say. I'm here talking to you. The News of the World, no longer here.
Bankrupt.
Yeah.
Oh, gone.
And gone. So I think that's a good thing.
Yep.
Although... the police and the press still do run the country.
Yeah.
Unlike the government. I was never the England captain when I got into the side in 95, and I wasn't England captain in 07. I don't have to be a captain. You don't have to be a captain to say anything that you want to say on a rugby field. Mm. Martin Johnson was an excellent captain. We had about 8 or 9 guys who had all captained England in that team. I was one of them. Ultimately, if you're playing number 8, you're going to have a pretty big say in what happens. Should we keep it or should we give it to the backs? I mean, that's generally... So you don't need to be captain. I had a lot of respect for Martin Johnson, but I made sure I won every game that I played against him after that.
I mean, I couldn't operate if I wasn't captain, but that's just the way I live my life. There's one guy in my rugby team who challenged me, a guy, we call him Simba, just because his dad died. He tried to take the captaincy away from me, but I luckily, my dad's quite a big investor in it.
Yeah.
So in the end, I won the say. It's a hard knock life in Clapham.
You still captain now?
But yeah, still captain now, club secretary.
You're not being promoted?
No, I just signed a 4+1, so I'll be going into my 40s.
You used to stand upright in all the lineouts.
Who's that?
Captain.
Yeah, I also... I just enjoy the leadership thing. Yeah. In the city, luckily my godfather, you won't know this, but I spent my gap year in Canary Wharf, and I worked for my godfather's company. I've worked my way up the corporate ladder in my godfather's company, and that, you know, as I get higher and higher and I can delegate more and more, I've really come into my own. And weirdly, you make more money.
So what style of leadership would be your unique style?
I'm old school, you know. I'll say it how it is. I mean, that has got me in trouble. I've got three warnings. Don't, you know,
three trenches backwards.
I say it, well, Sandra's normally in front of me when I'm saying it, but I'll just say stuff, you know. I'm like, you know, I'll say how it is. You know, if people are overweight in the office, I'll say it. I mean, you can't say that these days to girls.
Oh, fattest.
Yeah, you can't be fattest, especially. But I didn't know she was pregnant at the time. but, you know, and I'll like, sometimes I get the sales team in, I'll lock the doors, old school rugby, put a crate in the room, and I'll just be like, guys, get naked. We're going to drink these beers and we're going to open up. And some of the best times you have is getting pissed.
It's a bit of a reflection of the last 50 years of my life. Hearing you there.
You're more than welcome. We do it. We have lock-in Wednesdays every last Wednesday of the month. So if you want to come down, you're in great nick. I mean,
stop it.
You're cycling for your charity, right?
I am, yes. I have a charity called Rugby Works. We work with young kids who've been expelled from school. not those types of schools, not Ampleforth. I just feel, I work with 14 to 17 year old boys and girls, and we use rugby as a sort of way of hooking them in. We work in pupil referral units all around the country, and we get them into full-time employment and education. It's an amazing charity. 67% of everyone in prison has been expelled from school. That is very worrying. There is 160 14 to 17 year olds expelled every week from school. 67% end up in prison, and then 66% of all prisoners reoffend. So, you know, there's this kind of cycle that's going around that's costing all of us a lot of money. And I don't think most kids are not bad. They're not born bad. They're just born into chaos. You know, they're not born into daddy's company or born into, you know, loving families like mine. They're born into drug abuse, violent abuse, no parenting, you know, generational unemployment. And all they really need is a bit of help. So, Rugby Works exists because if you're excluded from school, I don't think you should be excluded from society. I have to raise 1.5 million a year to fund the charity. I work with about 2,000 young people a year. We have an 85% success rate of getting them into full-time employment and education. So ever since 2010, when I couldn't run anymore, I thought I better do something to get inspired. So I thought about getting on a bike, and this was before the kind of mammals lycra thing existed. So I cycled from Rome to Edinburgh in 2010. I think 2012 I cycled from Athens to London, which meant I could just go on tour for a month. I've decided now to rein it in. This is the last one I'm doing. It's in April. It's called the Dallaglio Cycle Slam. We're cycling from Rome to Nice, about 100 miles a day. I mean, as you can see, I'm an alcoholic with a cycling problem.
you're very smell. I did Kenny Logan bike ride in the summer, so I cycled from Scotland to Paris, and it was one of the best experiences.
Well, you went from Marlow to Paris.
Hey, listen, I had to join halfway. I had work commitments, but it was great. And if Kenny Logan can do it, then I reckon you could definitely do it, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 115 kilos. I mean, I go very slowly uphill. Yeah. But
I found it easy when Kirsty Gallagher was in front of me, though, because that spurred me.
Gave you the inspiration you needed.
Yeah.
For about 3K, and then she left you for dead.
She did actually.
But listen, I'm doing it with a load of other people. If people want to get involved, they can look on the website, Dallaglio Rugby Works.
We'll put it in the bio.
And can anyone join?
You can cycle. Yeah, cycle for 5 days. It is a rugby tour on wheels, so
you have been warned.
You have to train for the cycling, but you also probably have to train a bit harder for the evening activities. Yeah. But I feel like you two would be.
I'd be a wonderful tourist.
I
went mano a mano with Jimmy Nesbitt for a couple of days, and.
On the pints of lady petrol.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary experience. Yeah, I've never seen anyone drink it so much, and can
win a BAFTA like that.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well,
he's a top man.
Lawrence, talking about top men, I want to ask you about Sean Edwards. Obviously, you were there when he arrived. He invented the blitz defence, being quite heavily critiqued now in the England rugby team. But like, we've been told he was a fucking crazy guy off the pitch. Just give us a couple of stories like him knocking out players. Is that true?
I don't think there's anything quite like that. I met Sean Edwards. I mean, listen, he was a great, he was a rugby union player until he was 18. And then he was offered the chance to play rugby union, but for nothing. And he was offered to play for Wigan for a few quid. So he became rugby league. We obviously supported that Wigan team, you know, some greats throughout that whole era, you know, Ellery Hanley for, well, I mean, Sean Edwards, Martin Afire, Jason played Robinson, you know, all those incredible players. I first came across Sean in the tunnel, actually, when Wigan played Wasps in the Middlesex Sevens. And I looked at my team, and we had guys like Andy Gomersall and Peter Scrivener and Shane Royce. I looked at their team, and it was Sean Edwards, Andy Farrell, Gary Connolly, Vainga Twigamala, Jason Robinson, Martin Afire. And anyway, I started you know, swearing and expletives and cursing. And I think we went out to an 18-0 lead, and then we got beaten 25-18. Oof. And Sean Edwards said, he said he joined Wasps after that because he quite liked the idea that, you know, that Wasps were his team. Wigan, Wasps, Wales. He's always, yeah, I said, yeah. Does it have to begin with a W? Yeah. But anyway, he is just, do you know what? He's just an amazing human being. He went through a lot of tragedy as well. He lost his brother in a terrible car accident, and he went on a bit of a you know, voyage of discovery. He landed at Wasps, and I think he felt like Wasps was his home. You know, he was going through a tough time, and he enjoyed himself.
Is
there.
It time he's been given the England job?
I mean, look. He wouldn't necessarily be the guy that wants to front it all up.
He did at Wasps.
And Warren Gatland, yeah. And then him, and you know, you always need a good cop, bad cop combination. Yeah. Yeah. The best teams are there's an alchemy that exists between coaches and players, and you know, ultimately. It's not just one coach, there's a number of different things, but Sean has been, everywhere he's gone, he's been successful. You know, he won countless medals as a player for Wigan and Great Britain. He then joined Wasps and we won everything.
Yeah.
He then joined Wales and they over-delivered, didn't they? Three Grand Slams,
yeah.
Been with France. Everywhere he's been, he's won trophies. I think he's won over 50, you know, medals as a coach alone, let alone a player. So he's a serial winner, right? And serial winners detest losing. That's why you become a serial winner. And I think that England have offered him a role. He got up very honestly in front of all of us at Wasps and just said, just so that you realise, I'm staying here because England have offered me this role. I can't pick the team. I can't do this. They're going to offer me 18 grand a year. I mean, it was a derisory offer. And Sean's one of those people that is incredible human being, but you need to feel part of a family. You need to feel loved. You need to feel, he's very loyal. Wasps offered him a great deal and he stayed there for 8, 9, 10 years, whatever it was. Wales offered him a great, you know, deal. He stayed there for a long time. And then France came in, probably because of Ibanez at Wasps, and offered him a deal. And England have missed out. If you think about all the coaches that England have had and then let go, the English rugby union job seems to be a graduate scheme for people to come in, coach England, make loads of mistakes, and then go on and become a better coach. Mm. Don't quite understand what they think they're doing. We employ people before they should be employed and give them the job, when there's probably better qualified people around the world, and then they go on, like Andy Farrell and Mike Catt, like Stuart Lancaster, you know, to make their mistakes with England and then become better coaches. Sean Edwards was the opposite way around. He was definitely qualified for the job at the time when Wasps were at their pomp.
Yeah.
I did come back from New Zealand, Australia, where we'd just been on tour in 2004, and I think I said to Rob Andrew at the time, you know, look, they were interviewing Graham Henry. I said, you could do worse than, you know, go and speak to Warren Gatland and Sean Edwards and take them together. And of course, that never happened. And they went to Wales, and Wales won, you know, three Grand Slams in the first 4 years or whatever it was. Mm. Even now, you know, Steve Borthwick was given the role. You know, Scott Robinson was available.
Yeah.
Scott Robinson probably... do you know what? The decision was probably made on the basis that after Eddie Jones, England or the RFU felt that they wanted someone English.
Somebody straight as well.
Someone English. The England team at the moment are still, yes, there's transition. Yes, there's young kids coming in. But there is still a core of very experienced players. George Ford, Danny Kerr. I mean, they've got over 150 caps between them. Jamie George, Mario Toji, Henry Slade. Mm. You know, there's a lot of experience in that team. And it's their responsibility to, when you go 10-0 up, you know, it's their job to make sure that you see that game out. And I mean, I know you've got Scottish mates. I've got one or two.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I played Scotland 13 times. I lost once.
Yeah.
And it was the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a guarantee.
Worst day of my life. I played Wales 13 times. I lost once. It was the second worst day of my life.
Wow.
And, I would not go out and buy a pint of milk for 4 or 5 days if I'd lost an international rugby match. I'd be personally humiliated and ashamed. The shopkeeper would take the piss out of me.
But they are apologising on Instagram, aren't they now?
Yes.
So. I mean, you know, it's just, it's important, you know, it is life. You know, there's only two emotions in sport, agony or ecstasy. You either win or lose. You know, there's nothing in between.
Exactly the same emotions in the city as well. Yeah.
And in the clubs afterwards.
Yes. Yeah. I've had, although I should say, because everyone know listen to podcasts, I had a real bad agony
if Ask is DJ.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Guaranteed.
Well, I had a bad problem with pre-workout, but now I've managed to sort that one out. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, have you?
Yeah.
You were a bit chatty in Oxford with Vondell last week.
No. I was just excited.
Tom Vondell, he's a character.
You got a problem in pre-workout?
Well, I had a problem with pre-workout, yeah.
Have you chatted that through with your girlfriend yet?
No, I don't. Actually, because basically, I don't have a girlfriend. I met a girl in Inferno's. I thought she was American, but when I took her home in the morning, she turned out she's from Middlesbrough. So I gave her a brown envelope.
Oh,
and
I'll tell you what, Danny Cipriani had the same problem.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the accent, was it?
But the magical thing is when I had a daughter, actually, that was the most beautiful day of my life. Because she had it.
Chairman of the Sex Offenders Anonymous Club.
No. She, when my daughter was born, she was born in Middlesbrough. And I remember making the call, transferring the money. And I said, just send it down in an Uber. And I just remember that moment.
That's horrific.
Do you know when you're watching the Uber go, come and pick you up? And that was a magical 3 hours. And it was just watching the car come down. I knew, counting down the day I'd be a dad. Although at one point he did go the wrong way. I called him and then he said he was just getting petrol. I said, that's fine, just come on down.
Yeah. You mentioned Cipriani there. What was it like? I know Cipriani and Josh Lucy had that huge clash. Do you remember that at training or not?
Well, they had a little, Josh knocked him out in training. I said, what the fuck did you do that for? He said, well, you know, he's going out with Kelly Brook. He's good looking. He's playing for England and I hate him. So
fair enough.
Good enough reasons.
Yeah. So I said, that's good enough reasons.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Danny was a great kid. We never, ever had any problems with Danny Cipriani. It was, and he had probably the best time of his life there. His England debut, where he came on for Johnny Wilkinson, I think, or he had Johnny Wilkinson on the bench, and he was there and he scored 19 points on his debut. After he'd finished sending the tickets the week before in the nightclub. and he was just, oh, it was the best England debut I've ever seen. And unfortunately, things, you know, I think he never quite settled anywhere, really. He was always, you know, I think he was at his most settled when he was at Wasps.
Earlier, we were talking about possible mutinies in the England coaching role. Talking about England coaches, obviously Brian Ashe in 2007, we get destroyed in that first game or second game against South Africa, and then suddenly turn it around. But what was the mutiny like in that room?
It wasn't a mutiny. I mean, listen, we lost 36-0. I mean, it's really hard to play a game of rugby and score nothing. You've got to try really hard to do that, but we managed it comfortably. And I don't know, look, I mean, ultimately, as I said to you before, in my opinion, it's only my opinion, people will disagree, every appointment of every England coach since 2003 has been the wrong appointment. You know, I don't think Brian Ashton necessarily, he's a brilliant coach, but not necessarily the guy to be in charge, because he didn't really like a meeting. So if you don't have a meeting, you don't really know what's going on, do you? So what happens when you don't know what's going on is players will align themselves with the coach that furthers their own personal advancement in the team. So I think you had a lot of players who were going in different directions. All we did was just keep it very simple. We lost South Africa, everyone was embarrassed. We then played Tonga and Samoa, I think, and we were always going to win those games, which we did. And then we played Australia in the quarterfinal, which was brilliant, because they probably got a bit arrogant and thought they were going to win. You know, Johnny Wilkinson. We looked at the team. We had, you know, Johnny Wilkinson was in the team, Jason Robinson, you know, and we had some players, Phil Vickery, captain. We had some amazing players who stepped up. You know, Andy Sheridan, you know, famously.
Yeah.
That, I have to say, was probably one of the greatest days, rugby days, I've ever been involved in.
Marseille.
Because we're in Marseille. We beat Australia in the sunshine. And it's an amazing game. And then we went down into the port and watched New Zealand against France in Cardiff, but from the port in Marseille.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the French were getting absolutely toasted in the first half and, you know, queues for the bar. And then second half, we were behind the bar pouring our own drinks because the French suddenly came back. And, you know, to think that at the beginning of that World Cup, England would beat Australia and France would beat New Zealand was incredible, really. So
it was an amazing World Cup. Obviously, 2007, not great, but 2003, you win the World Cup. Like, we asked Will Green with the same question. What was, like, the best memory from that? Not necessarily winning the World Cup, but that kind of whole...
I think the best memory, just being serious again, vaguely serious, obviously after John Howard had finished throwing the medals on us, and we got back. It was the best side in the world for about 3 or 4 years. We'd been from 2000 in South Africa when we won in Bloemfontein to 2003 in Sydney, 22nd November, we beat New Zealand, South Africa, Australia 15 times home and away, which was something that I think to this day we're still very proud of. But I think we knew then that that was the end of a journey. We were in the changing room after the game, we shut the door, and that was probably the best 2 hours I ever remember of that group, because you knew there were people in tears, just overwhelmed, there were people laughing, there was none of those camera phones. There was just literally, it was just amazing. Not just the playing group, but all the management and everyone that had been around the squad. Prince Harry managed to, you know, find his way in there.
Sure.
Daniel Craig. I mean, obviously, yeah. you're not going to not let him in, are you?
Coming.
Like License to Kill.
Yeah.
I think we all thought we had License to Kill, mate, to be fair. You just wanted to hold on to that next 2 hours because once that door opened, your life changed forever. I got a phone call from Warren Gatlin. And he said, have a good few nights. You're obviously quite pissed. I went, yep. He said, I need you back next week. You're not playing. You're going to be parading the World Cup with Johnny Wilkerson up in Newcastle. He said, then you're going to be playing the following week for Wasps against Perpignan. And you imagine, you're in the shape of your life because you've just been training to, you know, for the World Cup. So I went straight back to Wasps, you know, excited to get back. We won the European Cup that year. We won the league that year. So I think they call that a raw flush, really.
Oh, yeah, man, you can't get better.
World Cup, European Cup. And then I got on a plane down to New Zealand to captain England again, because I did get the captaincy back, just not with the same team.
Yeah.
We got beat by 50 points. But it was just an amazing experience. That whole 0-3 side, it was amazing. Great experience. And I think that changing room for the 2 hours that we had together, you know, you can climb Mount Everest, get to the top, and feel quite pleased with yourself. But when you do it with a group of people and you help yourself along the way, because the journey wasn't straightforward. You know, we had a lot of hiccups along the way, both on and off the field. I think to be in that moment together and celebrate together was very, very special. And that's probably been the nadir of English rugby ever since. And that's the greatest tragedy. I don't know if you read that book, Legacy, by the All Blacks, but the whole idea is when you inherit something, you build on it, you make it better, and you leave it in a better place than when you arrived. Instead of dismantling it all, they should have taken it and built on it.
I blame Andy Gidd.
It's funny when you talk about that, the closing the door in that last 2 hours, because that's something I can definitely relate to, because I had that sort of similar feeling when I...
In a cell in Brixton?
No, no, it's actually my boarding school, Leavers Ball. And I remember they closed the tent on a big marquee do. They closed the tent and we had that 2 hours together. And I just exactly said, like, you know, life won't be the same since. But we have built, actually from our school, we actually built on that. We allowed a network where the kids can leave school and come and work and, you know, very offices, and they go on to have more success. That's and more amazing. Success. Brilliant. Yeah, really good.
One thing we
Bill Sweeney could learn a lot from what I've done.
Yeah, the burst is built on the school thing.
Really. One thing we haven't mentioned is obviously you went on 3 Lions tours.
Yeah.
You're saying then we got all the decisions wrong since 03. Clive, probably wrong for 05 quickly. Yes,
not wrong coach, just tried to assume a methodology that didn't work for the Lions. You know, you've got we're playing New Zealand, who were pretty hot at the time. I mean, the Six Nations that year wasn't the best quality Six Nations. Gavin Henson, no disrespect to Wales, won the Grand Slam with a penalty kick or something. England and Ireland were pretty poor. You know, if the cattle on your farm aren't as good as the cattle on the next farm, then doesn't matter who the cattle master is, you're not going to win, are you?
I know, just coming to an end, but just one question I want to ask, because I obviously you've speaking about your charity.
Yeah.
I know that evidently everything you're sort of speaking about is about, you know, the passion and rugby saved your life, and you've had some dark moments. It sounds like you've obviously been in a position that you want to help people, right? And when did that decision come from?
I think the greatest
come from success, or
I think a bit of both, really. I mean, I was lucky enough to grow up I got two things in my life from my mum and dad. I got unconditional love, which as a parent is easy thing to say, but it's a hard thing to give. And when I say unconditional, when the police used to knock on the door, my mum went, not my Lawrence, definitely not my Lawrence. Yeah. And I got given a belief system that you can go and conquer the world. And look, I've had I've had a life less ordinary. It's been extraordinary, really. But there's two things you can guarantee. You arrive in this world with nothing and you leave with nothing, all right? Whoever we are, that's happening, right? And what happens in between is really important. And we all chase health, wealth, and happiness. And, you know, you get to a point where you think, actually, the greatest gift in life is giving, right? And, you know, try and make every interaction a positive one and leave people in a better place than when you arrived. And that's kind of my mantra, really. So on that note, we should end this podcast and go on the smash.
Absolutely.
We are going to finish.
I've got a table at the Ned.
We're going to finish with a quick fire. You're literally going to give me one word, first thing which comes to your mind.
Go on.
Best moment on the pitch?
Lions.
Worst moment?
Scotland.
Most hungover you've ever been for a game?
well, the headline the day before was Dally's Pallies Go Do Lally. I was opening a hospital, is what I said to Warren Gatland.
Dirtiest player you've ever played against?
Probably someone South African. They're all dirty, aren't they?
Really? Best player you've ever played against?
Back row, Richard Hill and Neil Back. Generally in life, Jason Robinson.
And the worst?
Well, anyone who's brave enough to be on a rugby field is not a bad man in my book.
There's a couple of guys playing from rugby team. They're awful, but they just turn up. We've got a sort of, you know, it's a benchmark of what we're looking forward to doing on a rugby team. They're good lads. Their dad's got second homes. It's good for business, but they're terrible. We stick them on the wing.
Their dad sponsors the team.
Yeah, well, it is a business at the end of the day. Yeah. It's about giving, as you said, but to the club. We need a bar.
Does he have chat? Or does he have no chat?
Simon Shaw.
Chat. Andy Farrell.
Definite chat.
Johnny Wilkinson.
No chat.
Josh Lucy.
No chat.
Phil Vickery.
Chat.
Danny Cipriani.
No chat.
Matt Dawson.
No chat.
Ben Kay.
Chat.
Martin Johnson.
Chat.
Brian O'Driscoll.
Chat.
And Paul O'Connell.
Chat.
Lawrence Delaney, you've been an absolute joy.
Thank you very much.
We're going to put all the information for your incredible ride and the charity in the bio below. And hopefully we can see you.
Let me know if you want to come. All I'm saying is I raised 10 grand for Kenny. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
91,000 followers on Instagram.
Well, that'll pay the first night's bar bill. I think we need to raise a few more, don't we?
Yeah, Lawrence, thank you so much for coming on, man. That was wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. Thank you for having me.
Well, Archie, that was very enjoyable.
Oh, my God.
Great story.
I honestly feel like I've just lost my virginity again.
Really?
That was exhausting, exhilarating and pretty amazing.
Okay.
It just went in a blur. It's almost like Lawrence Jallier made love to me.
Well, it's funny you say talking about losing virginity.
It's like being in a washing machine of chat. It's just so much coming at you. You just don't know what you're doing. But you come out of it and you feel rejuvenated and refreshed. Honestly, it takes me back to being a schoolboy who lost my virginity. I'm all giggly.
Well, we should probably crack on. But just before we do, Archie, we've got time for one quick installment of Clubhouse Stories.
Oh, yes! Want to see you in the clubhouse. I want to see you in the clubhouse. I want to hear about the time that you met that rugby player. This is honestly my favourite part of the podcast.
Yeah, forget Galileo, one of the greatest players ever been in studio with us.
Sorry, I'm still giggling after Lawrence Jallier.
Right.
But mate, honestly, I'd really love to do a podcast, GS Clubhouse Stories. Can we look into that?
We'll look into that.
Write that down.
But let's get into it, because we don't have much time left, Archie. This one is from Owen Hewitt.
Oh, the newts.
The new.
I'd call him the new.
Since the dawn of time.
Quite a good banter that.
The Brooks Rugby Club has been a prized community of athletes.
Yeah. Fair play. We went down there for our tour and some of them were in great shape. I took a few of the body fat percentages from them. Decent.
Really?
Yeah.
In more recent times, it's become.
I said to him, just come to the loo with me. And I had my fat scissors and I just said, come in the cubicle. And I just took it. It's brilliant.
In more recent times, it's become plagued with so-called rig doctors and top shaggers.
Yeah. Well, every rugby team is, mate.
Yeah. A name that rings a bell to this is Alex Cole.
Coley. Oh, my God, mate. Coley.
Do you know him?
I think he was at the pod, mate.
Yeah.
What a boy.
Worryingly, he's our current welfare officer.
Oh, but that is so funny because there's going to be a mischievous story about him. And he's the welfare officer. That's kooky like Joe Marler.
Not too long ago, he developed a small case of scabies that spread like wildfire, making his lower half look like it had just gone 12 rounds with a beehive.
Oh, my God. I'm just trying to imagine. Ugh.
Somehow, despite the setback, he managed to grab himself a date with a well-educated Oxford student.
Fair play, rugby players do, because they've got good chat. It doesn't really matter if you've got, like, warts on your cock.
After a few hours of Colesy telling this girl about his first team successes and the fact he managed to block Henry Rothschild's toilet, the girl agreed to go home with him.
Yeah, well, if you talk anything, any chat about the Rothschilds, you're in there. Yeah.
You're in.
Sometimes that's what I open with. I just say, like, I just go in there and be like, I know someone is in the Rothschild family, and then you straight away, you're snogging. Oh, I've given that away now. Everyone's going to be using that.
After a little foreplay, out came the beehive piece and in it went. A total of 30 seconds later, she apparently fell in love with the built-in ribbed effect as she disclosed her love for Alex during the 20-minute car journey home.
Wow.
As he didn't want to spend the night with her.
Wow, that's really impressive. So how do I go about getting...
So you just need to get scabies in your cock.
How do you do that?
He finishes by saying, thanks to his work, over half the current Brooks students have now developed a hive crotch and scabies, and this number doesn't seem to be slowing down. You basically need to share a towel with one of the boys.
Okay, well, can I order it on Amazon?
I don't think so.
I'm going to look into that. Can you look into that?
I'll look into that now. Well, Archie, it's been an absolute honour to be with you, but I must say, even more so with Delalia. What a legend.
Oh, man.
He's asked us to go out tonight.
I know. I just want to say, what a bloody pod. You were fantastic,
thank
mate.
Thank you. So
it just shows where this pod is.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. It was really, really phenomenal. And also, I'll bring it up in your one-to-one on Monday. You've done bloody well, mate.
Are we going up to Delalia tonight?
Yes, we will. But I better bring a new pair of lungs, considering he smokes like an absolute trooper.
Yeah, we're up in Soho. I
shouldn't forget, tickets are still available. There's a
well, we've got about, what, five, 6 days until we play Edinburgh.
Yeah, so...
Jim Hamilton, yeah. A great fan of the show, a great friend of the show, and a wonderful podcast. And Hell's Angel, he's kooky, guys. Yeah, he's a bit like Joe Marler, actually.
Yeah, he is quite kooky, actually. So, but yeah, no, do buy your tickets up in Edinburgh. It's going to be a phenomenal night. I can't wait. It's gonna really probably make my Q1. It'll make or break my Q1. I'll put that pressure on me.
And if you're in Glasgow, come down. It's only an hour. If you're in Durham, come up. It's an hour.
Yeah, more to the Durham people.
More to the Durham people. Okay,
if you're in Glasgow, just stay there.
Just stay in Glasgow.
Otherwise, Ryan Wilson will come down. He wants
some money again. Yeah. Well, Archie, it's been absolutely wonderful to see you. Enjoy Twickenham this week, and we will... debrief next week with another huge guest.
Yeah, okay, all I've got to say is love and champagne, mate. That was absolutely brilliant. I like pleasure spiked with pain, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Samba, sweet and sour Jane, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Pleasure spiked with with pain.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus. Moto Casino. America's social casino. Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.